All right, we're going to start here on the top of Mem Vav Amud Aleph, six lines down. Yesterday we left off with discussing until where does the chut shidra go for an behema, the spinal column, the spinal cord, how far down the body does it go? Yesterday we discussed the fact that it reaches until the sacrum. Rashi brought down two possibilities about what it was in the sacrum, whether it was the branching of the nerve endings in the sacrum, the sacral nerves that break off, the first, second, and third, or the other possibilities within the sacrum itself. The sacrum, the shape of the bone is that it has three wings, and that's what we were speaking about, those three wings of the bones. Rashi heavily favors the splitting of the nerves. And then the Gemara discussed, until the first nerve, it's clear that it's the shidra. After the third nerve, splitting of the nerves, it's clearly not the shidra. In between, we had questions about it, whether it was advad bichlal, advalo ad bichlal, how much did it include, whether the split itself, the place where the split happens itself, does that include it, as well as the prisha, the split, the nerves that break off themselves, what's their din? So all of those questions we dealt with behema. Now the Gemara jumps over to an oaf. What's the din by a bird? Where does the chut shidra go when it comes to a bird, the spinal column? Rabbi Anai Omer, the mata min agafayim, goes to beneath the wings. Beish Lakish Amar ad ben agafayim, that goes between the wings. So the way Rashi explains this is that the bird has the bones that extend from the body, that are the bones, they're the wings, they're the equivalent of what would have been the arms for the bird, and they're pretty far up in the body of the bird, where that bone extends from the body. And the machloket between them is, how far down? Is it ad lamata min agafayim, until below that bone, that's considered chut shidra? Or is it ad ben agafayim, only until that point, that is between the bones? So that area, that would be the two possibilities according to Rashi. Tosafot offers a third possibility, which he says, "Lahishlis tapek im lamata miyukom chiburam baguf kamar." Does it mean below the area where they attach to the body? Attach to the body mean with the bone. Im lamata miyukom shushochvot al aguf. I know lamata misof etzem shel kanaf hamuchubar baguf. So, is the other possibility is the wing itself? The wing itself sits on the body. So, is it the end of the bone where it's attached to the actual spinal column from the ribs and outward? Or is it actually the way the wings sit on the body of the bird? And the way they sit, wherever that wing ends, that's what we're speaking about, which would obviously much further down in the body in terms of the chut shidra, according to that shot in Tosafot. Samarlu Ava Kamina Kamei de Ben Pazi, Vaitele Kamei Ofa, they brought before him a bird, Ubadak Ad Ben Agafayim, and he checked until between the wings. Vishalach Lei de Ben Nisiyah, and then he was called out to the house of the Nasi, Vekam Vazal, and he left. Veloyadana, and I had no idea why he left. Imishum to Lotzarech Lemibdach Tvei, because he was done checking. Imishum Kvod Nisiyah, or because of the Kvod Anasi, he had to leave right away, and therefore he wasn't able to finish checking. So I don't know if this is normative, what he was doing, and we can learn anything from the halacha. Sounds like it would have been Ben Agafayim, but I'm just not sure that that is normative, because I don't know why he left, and therefore we have a safek whether it should be until Ben Agafayim or to the Mata Min Agafayim. Nitla hakaved shela, that's the next trefa on the Mishnah, which is that if the entire liver is removed, ha nishtayer menu klum, if any remnant of the liver is there, ksheira, afagav to lahavi kazayit, even though it's not the size of a kazayit, v'hatnan, the next Mishnah, which is the opposite of our Mishnah, which is elu ksheirot, there it says nitla kaved, v'nishtayer menu kazayit, that if the kaved is removed, and remaining of it is a kazayit worth, ksheira. So we had discussed this earlier, that there's a stira between the Mishnayot. Our Mishnah seems to say that as long as there's any remnant of the liver, it's kasher, whereas if subsequent Mishnah seems to say that you need at least a kazayit for it to be kshera. So I'm Rav Yosef lo kasha, ha Rabbi Chiya, ha Rabbi Shimon bar Rabbi. It's a machloket tanaim here between Rabbi Chiya and Rabbi Shimon bar Rabbi. Ki had Rabbi Chiya zarik lo. I'll read you the pashtut of the Gemara now, is that Rabbi Chiya used to throw it out to the dogs, meaning that he thought it was a treifa, and therefore he used to throw it out. Rabbi Shimon bar Rabbi matbi lo. And Rabbi Shimon bar Rabbi used to eat it. He used to eat an animal with such an issue, meaning that if it had a liver that was not the size of kazayit, he would still eat it. Misimanech, and the siman to remember who has which opinion is Ashirim Mikamsim. Rich are miserly, or the rich are dipping. Here over here, the rich one is Rabbi Shimon bar Rabbi. He's the son of the Nasi, and he was very wealthy. And he was Mikamets, he saved. Over here, he was Matbil, the liver. And therefore, he was of the opinion that the liver is okay and kasher. That's the simplest way to read the Gemara. Rashi brings an alternative shot. He says, kach shamati, what we just said. And then he brings an alternative shot. It's of a nira be'inai. De be'isr beheter tarif U'mechasher ha'vashayach l'mitneh. If we're talking about Iser and Heter over here, then what is the issue of Zarik law and Matbil law? Matbil law and Zarik law are not relevant when you're talking about Iser and Heter. It should be kosher or pasul, kosher or treifa. The language being used here doesn't make so much sense. So Rashi then interprets what they're saying to be different. And he says, Rabbi Chiya, Zarik la l'kaved shel kol behema. He used to throw out all the livers. V'lo yachlo. And he didn't eat any of it. He didn't consider it to be of value. So he used to throw the liver out. Rabbi Shimon matbila. On the other hand, Rabbi Shimon used to dip it. Da'afa gav d'la basarhu, even though it's not flesh. Ka'achila, he ate the liver. Mishum briyuta, because he thought it was healthy. Because zavar nishama t'luya bo, the life force is attached to the liver. And then kol nefesh meshiv nefesh, that anybody who eats something that has a life force in it gives life to him. So he thought it was of a health reasons he ate the liver. Hilkach im lo nishtar kazayit la'alot aruka she'achzor v'yirapeh treifa. Therefore, according to Rabbi Shimon by Rebbe, you have to have enough of the liver left that it can regenerate itself, and that's only true if you have a kazayit. Rabbi Chiya lo ba'i kedei la'alot aruka, and Rabbi Chiya doesn't believe it. Doesn't matter how much is left. Elishyura purta. Makom, Talia Mara, Deshira B'makom Rabin, and he just needs the slightest amount that's there. So again, the idea being that since Rabbi Chiya threw away the liver, he didn't consider it at all, and so the idea being here that he didn't think that the liver was of any significance, and therefore you can have any amount left, and that would be fine. Whereas according to Rabbi Shimon Rabbi Erbi, that it's Neshamat Luyaba, then when it's a significant organ in that sense, then he requires a kazayit so that it can regenerate itself. And he was the one of the opinion that the kaved requires the kazayit. The exact opposite of what we said before. And then simanech ashirim mekamtzim. Again, the siman would be that the ashirim, Rabbi Shimon Rabbi Erbi, who was the nasi, was the atzran, was the one who kept it around. It was makpid to eat it. Those are the two possibilities of reading this as to what whose opinion is which in the case of the our Mishnah that says you need only a small amount left. Pashtut of the Gemara is that that's referring to Rabbi Shimon Bar Erbi. And the next mission that says you need to acquire kazayit was referring to Rabbi Chiya. On the other hand, Rashi has this alternative pshat, which flips those positions around and says that Rabbi Chiya is of the opinion that you don't need any amount. You can have, that's the author of our mission. Rabbi Shimon Rebbe is the author of the subsequent mission, which requires a kazayit. All right. Ha'om pum Musa, da'ato de pum pedita. There was an army, non-Jewish army, that showed up in pum pedita. Arku Rabbi Yosef. Rabbi Yosef took off because they were a little afraid of what was going to happen in town, so they took off. Pagabahu Rabbi Zerub. Zerub bumped into them. Amar lahu arukai. You, I don't know if you call them deserters, you that are running away. Let me tell you something. Kazayit shamru, the kazayit that we're talking about by the liver, but makom mara, has to be in the place where it's attached to the gallbladder. Ravada bravar amar, but makom shichaya. On the other hand, Ravada bravar says it has to be the place where it draws its life or it's attached, and that is up by the area below the kidney. And that area, that's where it attaches to the upper ribs and comes out of, and that's Makom Shechaya. That's what Rashi says, that area where it generates from. So those are the play Mark Lokat here. You either need the kazayit by the area where it's attached to the gallbladder, or do you need the kazayit up by the area where it's attached below the kidneys. Now, Rabbi Zeira bumped into Rabbi Rav Yosef. Tosus points out over here that Rabbi Zeira lo haya tzarech livroach. Daviv gabay shel melachaya. That Rabbi Zeira didn't have to run away from the troops over here because his father was one of the servants of the king. He was one of the collectors of the king, and therefore he didn't have to fear and leave town. So that's why he called Rabbi Rav Yosef those that ran away, because he himself did not have to run away at the time. And the conclusion is, Amar Papa Hilkach Binan Kazayit B'Makom Mara, Binan Kazayit B'Makom Shichaya, Wachoshesh for both Shitot, as Tosa says, Hachi Kaimelon, that we need a Kazayit. In order for it to be fine by the liver, we need a Kazayit, both by the area where it attaches to the gallbladder, as well as the area where it comes out or is attached, and that's up again by the kidneys. If the kazayit is dispersed over in different locations, you don't have the kazayit in one location, do we bring them together and say, oh, now we have a kazayit of the liver? If they are strips of the liver that are left over, do we say that we reconfigure them to be the size of a kazayit? And by Ravashi, kazayit mirudad mahu, if they are pressed down, they're flattened pieces of the liver. Again, do we add them up? Do we make them volumetrically to match up with the liver? In all those cases, say teku. We don't know if those add up to a kazayit. And always when we have a teku in these types of cases, we go to chumra and it would be classified as a treifa. Bamine Rabbi Zrika me Rabbi Ami. Nidaldala kaved umura betar pishay. So if the kaved is hanging on, but it's slightly ripped away from tarpeshea's its fats. Tarpeshea is the what we call the oteret hakaved, the fats that surround the liver, and that's the liver is attached to those fats. In this case, if the liver is separated away from the fat, it's still attached, but it's stringy, in a stringy manner it's attached. It's not completely attached, just hanging on. Mahu, what's the din over there? The dildo that you're describing, I don't know what it is, and I don't know what the din is. But let me tell you something. If it's according to one who says you need a kazayat of the liver where the gallbladder is, haika, that you do have here, because in this case, the entire liver is there. We're just describing it being detached away from the uteret hakaved. If you're saying that you need a kazayat in the place where it comes out of, it's attached, and that's up by the kidneys, you also have that over here, haika. So in either case, either way, it should be mimanov shach, fine. This kaved should be totally fine, because I don't know why there should be any psul, because the fact that it's attached to the tarpeshe, to the yoteret hakaved that we have. Now, just to note, Rashi, early on, brought two different interpretations of what makom shechaya. I gave the interpretation that Rashi favored, which is the one that it says by the makom shemeurad vuka, the place where it's attached and sealed in, which is up by the klayot, up by the kidneys. It says, Zeh nirali, umitzativ, he says, that's my favorite interpretation. Lishna achrina, he does give an alternative over there as to what the makom shechaya is, and that's bioteret hakaved. The oteret hakaved, that fat that we just discussed over here, that Rashi says possibly, he has this, but he doesn't favor this interpretation, the possibility that that was what was makom shechaya, that you need a kazayit along that area, and that would partially explain what was going on in the Gemara over here. Okay, so the next one we have, and this we'll spend the rest of today on, which is hareya shenigva. Lungs that have a puncture in them are a trefa. So now, Rav Ushmael v'Rav Asi de Amre. They all say, karma ilo, v'am ilo, karma tata. They say that it's the upper membrane that was punctured. V'am ilo, and some say it's karma tata, which is referring to the lower membrane. So similar to the brain that we saw yesterday, or the testicle that we saw yesterday, there are two membranes that seal in the lungs. So the question is, when we talk about the puncture here, are we talking about the outer membrane or the inner membrane? So Amar of Yosef, Bar Min Yumi, Amar of Nachman, V'simanech, how do you know which what membrane we're talking about? It says, Kituna Devarda B'namancha Be'reya. The lower or the inner membrane that we're talking about over here is like a tunic, Devarda of a rose or a pink-colored, red-colored tunic, the mancha be'er, that the reya, that the lungs sit in. So the outer layer is a clear film. The inner layer has a red or pinkish tint to it. Now the Gemara says, pshita, e inkav ilo, if the outer membrane was punctured, velo inkav tata, the inner, the lower membrane was not punctured, tata magin, the lower one protects, and we don't have any problem. Kedarabba, tama rabba, Rabba has a statement, and the girsa is probably Rava, because we're going to see later on in the Gemara today, it's going to quote it again, it's going to sound like it's Rava. The high reya de iglid, a reya that was peeled back, that you stripped off the outer membrane, kahina sumka, it's going to look like a red date. And that's because the inner membrane, we just said, was zavardo, was red or pinkish. So now if you tear away the outer membrane, you're going to be left with this reddish lung. Kshera, that is fine, because that inner membrane is still protecting it. Now the Gemara's question is the other way around. Inkav tata. If the inner membrane is punctured, velo inkav ilo, but the outer membrane is not punctured, magin or lo magin, we're not sure as to whether the outer membrane protects. Pligi ba ravacha ravina, machlokis of ravacha ravina, chadamar lo magin, vechadamar magin. One says it does protect, one says it does not protect. Vehilchata, and the loch is magin. And over here, the loch is that it does protect. Tosfot says we don't need that, because choduchte kamelan karavina lekula. We always paskin like Ravina, the Kula. So over here also, we would paskin the Kula anyway, even without this halacha. It says we're bringing it down because of the next thing, Kid Rav Yosef. We wanted to bring down this din of Rav Yosef. Kid Rav Yosef, Tam Rav Yosef, Hai Reya Da Absha, a lung that makes noise. So if you blow into the lungs, you take the trachea and you blow into the lungs, it makes a sound. Like there's air escaping. There's something moving there, it makes some noise. Iya din an Hecha Absha, if we know where the noise is coming from, then matvinen ala gadfa, we put a feather on it, o roka, or saliva, o gila, or straw, something light, if when you blow into the lung, that item moves, then trefa, or tarfa, we know it's a trefa for sure, because that means the air is escaping from the lung, and the puncture is not only in the lower film, but even on the upper membrane. Vilo, if not, kshira, because that means that the air is not getting out, the hole is not all the way through, it's only on the inner membrane, not on the outer membrane. Vilo yadina and hecha absho, if we don't know where the air is escaping from, where the noise is happening, Maitina and mitichlita demaya, we bring a basin of water, pshure, of warm water, umodvina labigavan, we put the lungs in there, bichamimelo, we don't bring hot water, dikvitse, because the hot water causes it to contract, and even if there was a hole there, maybe the hot water would cause it to seal up, bikrielo, we also don't put it in cold water, and dimitarshe, because it hardens the lung, and maybe even if there wasn't a hole on the outer membrane, because it's hardened now, and the pressure of the air coming out through the lower membrane will cause the outer one to burst. So we don't put it in cold water, only in warm water. We blow into it. If we see bubbles coming out, then it's a trefa, because then we know the air is escaping from the lungs. If that's not the case, ksheira. So what's the question here? If you can hear a noise, and you hear air escaping, then obviously there's air coming out, there's a hole here. So what's the shaila? So this is the answer to that question, which is, tato inkav, ila lo inkav. In the case where we don't see bubbles coming out, then it's the lower film membrane that was punctured. The outer membrane's intact. The sound that you're hearing is the air coming between the two membranes. It's escaping from the lower membrane and then inserting itself between the lower membrane and the upper membrane. And that's what's causing the noise to happen. So it's not escaping entirely from the lungs. It's just that it's now in between the membranes. And that's what it means before. When you know where the location is, you know where the lower part is broken. And that's what you know where the noise is coming from. You place something on top to see it's also coming through the outer membrane. And that's how you test. And if you can't do that and you don't know where it is, you put it into water and you blow it like they check tires. If you want to see if there's a hole in the tire, you put it into water because anytime there's air escaping, there'll be bubbles in the water. So over here, when you put the lungs in and you blow, the bubbles come out if you'll know that there's air escaping from them. So Gufa, we're going back to the statement of Rava. That's why I said before it was Rabba. Now it's here, it's Rava, and that's why they changed the gear so before it's Rava. Gufa, I'm a Rava. Hi, Reya, the Iglid. Yeah, this rea that was peeled off, the outer membrane was peeled off. Kahina sumka, now it looks like a red date. Shera, it's totally fine. Ve'amar rava, rea shehidima miktzata. If you have a lung that is red in some location, shera. Kula, if it's entirely red, trefa. Then it's a trefa. So over here, what's the difference between these statements? Whether this second statement of rava is qualifying his first statement, or this is a totally separate case, which is the first case of rea de iglid is where you peeled off the outer membrane. The second case is where you didn't peel it off, but there's just red on the outside. The red on the outside is an indication of a problem. So, Amrle Ravina the Rava, Mitzata Maitaima. Why, when there's only a portion of it that's red, do you say it's fine? The Hajabario, because it'll become healthy again. It'll regrow, and it'll be fine. Kulanami Hajabario. So, too, if the whole thing is red, it'll go back, and it'll become healthy again. Milo Tanyo. And he says, what are you comparing this to? So, there are two possibilities of what you can compare it to, and this is in Dine Shabbos. Then in Shabbos, when we're talking about chovel on Shabbos, which is creating a wound on Shabbos, here there are different types of shretzim. There are normal shretzim, which have a very soft outer skin. And therefore, if you hit them, if you see red underneath the skin, the fact that there's red below means nothing. On the other hand, the shmona shretzim, the eight shretzim that are mentioned in the Torah, have much harder outer skins. So since they have harder outer skins, if you hit them, there's a possibility that the blood will gather beneath the skin and not come out. It'll eventually come out. It'll eventually push out and create a hole. But right now, it won't come out. So therefore, on Shabbos, if you hit them and you see the red come out underneath the skin, you'll be chayav for chovel, even though it doesn't come out. So that's what the question being raised here by Ravina to Rava. So Milo Tanya, don't we have a braita by Shabbos, which Rashi says he doesn't know where this is from. We've never had this quoted in Shabbos. He says he doesn't know the location of this braita. Bishar shkatzim viramasim. When it comes to any of these other Shkotzim Ramasim, Ad Shiyotzei Mehem Dam. You only chayav in Chovel B'Shabbat once the blood comes out. Since Oran or Rach, since their skins are soft, Chutz Mishmona Shmatzim, which have Oran Kasheh, Einu Chayav Alein B'Shabbat. You're not chayav on Shabbat, Mishum Chovel Ad Shiyotzei Mehem Tibat Dam, until the blood escapes. V'Avo Bish Nitzrar Dam Ve'edim Oran B'Bachutz, even though you see redness on the skin, Ein Zeh Lukuta, it's not a wound. Tok Sharan Rach, since their skin is soft, Hu Mimeher La'edim, it becomes red very easily, even though there's no wound or blood underneath it. So therefore, we don't worry about it unless it comes out. The blood actually escapes from them. B'chitema. All right, so you say you don't want to compare it to them. You want to compare it to the Shmona Shotzim and Daminile? Hadanya, we have a bright on Nitzrar Hadam, Avo Bishlo Yatza. Over here, if the blood gathers, even though it hasn't come out, then it's problematic. So Ihochi, in our case too, Afilo Mikzata Nami. So then it should be problematic. Eloloshna, it makes no difference. So what the suggestion of Ravina is Rava, okay, you see the red over here. You're seeing something on the lung. The indication is that there's something that's either gathered below the skin or not. How do you compare it? If you compare it to normal shkatzim and ramasim, where it's a soft skin, and you see red underneath, that means nothing. Since the skin is soft, it wounds easily, but it doesn't mean that there's anything underneath it until something comes out. So if nothing's come out and you just see red, then it's fine. And Ravina says, Mali miktata, mali kula. It should make no difference whether it's a portion of it or all of it. It should all become healthy again. There's no problem over here just because it's red. That's one possibility. The other possibility is you compare it to the Shmona Shvatzim. Over there, the Shmona Shvatzim has a hard outer skin, and blood could gather underneath the skin when there's a wound and it's not escaping. Red is an indication of a wound, not just that the skin is weak. So too over here. If the red in the lungs is an indication that there's something underneath, that'll eventually come out, just like by the Shmona Shvatzim, eventually it'll come out, and it's really a chavalah, so too over here. Whether it's kula or whether it's miktata, it shouldn't make a difference. It's as if there's a wound, there's a problem here, and that problem should make it into a treifa. So Ravina says, I don't know which one you're comparing it to, but either way, there should be no distinction between miktata and kula. Rashi says, then when the Gemara concludes loshna, Rashi says, loshna de ben kula ben miktata ksheira. Doesn't matter. Whether it's kula or miktata is red, then it's considered to be ksheira. That's why Rashi leaves loshna. Tosafot brings the Rabbeinu Chananel that says, loshna vitreifa. That it's a treifa. I mean, that depends which way you go. If you compare it to the other shkatzim and ramasim like Rashi does, then it'll be loshna. It's kasher no matter what. On the other hand, if you compare it to the Shmona Shvatzim, then whether it's miksato or kula, it'd be a treif. And that's what Rabbeinu Chananel does. And Tosafot lines up different parties that align with Rashi and those that align with the Rabbeinu Chananel. Tosafot asks on the Rabbeinu Chananel's understanding of the Gemara here that it's lo shna treifahi, that we say later on that when it comes to something that is aduma, that it's ksheira. So how could that be that you have a lung that is aduma and ksheira? According to Rabbeinu Chananel, it's lo shna, everything is a treifa. So Tosafot suggests that it's a lung that is red, but after you inflate it and you blow it up, it actually turns white. And for that reason, it's considered to be kasher, even though it's red. And the definition of red, according to Rabbeinu Chananel, is lo shna, and it's always a treifa. Here you have a case where it's red, but after it's inflated, it becomes white, and that's why it's kasher in that case. All right, now the Gemara says, V'amar Rava, Reya sheyavsha miktzata treifa. If a lung dries out in portion, a portion of the lung dries out, it's a treifa. V'kama, how much does it need to dry out in order to be treifa? Samra papi mishmei de Rava, kedei shetifrach b'tziporen. It has to crumble, it has to be so brittle that it crumbles by the nail. Now, there's some question as to what the girsa is here. There's a question if the word tziporin should be in the girsa. The Gemara matches up, and we'll see in a second, to a Mishnah in Bechorot. The Mishnah in Bechorot does not have the word tziporin in it. So if you're not goris the word tziporin in the Mishnah in Bechorot, it's all in likelihood you shouldn't be goris it here as well. The Rosh, I think others who are goris it here are also goris it in the Mishnah in Bechorot. They say you should amend the Mishnah to read tziporin over there. So the difference or the possibilities of what it means over here, if you believe it means tziporin, that means it's so brittle that when you touch it with your nail, it crumbles right away. That's what it'd be if you had tziporin. If you lack the word, if you don't have the word tziporin over here, it means that kadesh tifrach, that it's brittle and it crumbles between your fingers. Not with your tziporin, not with your nail, but between your fingers. The Rama brings down in the Darchi Moshe, another possibility is that bitziporin means if you slide your nail across the lung. If it's so dry that when you slide your nail across the lung, it leaves a mark and does not go back to its original state, that's how dry it is. It's too dry at that point because it doesn't go back to its original state. If when you run your thumb or your nail across the lung, it returns to its original state, that means that it's not dry. So the three possibilities as to what it means over here, kadesh tifrach bitziporin. Sounds like here, mashu, even the smallest amount. That's what Rava said before, miktata. Miktata means any amount, as long as there's any piece that's dried out. The reason for that, according to Rashi is, and we've seen that earlier, is that's the equivalent of having a hole. It's the equivalent of having a nekiv. And that being brittle and so dried out is no better than having a puncture inside of the lung. So it's either chaseira or it's a nekiv, and either of those is a treifa by the lungs. So then it would be the same amount as a nekiv, which is a mashu. The Gemara continues, Kaman, who is this like? Rabbi Yossi ben Meshulam. It's like Rabbi Yossi ben Meshulam. This is what I mentioned before, that this accords with the Mishnah in Bechorot, the Tanya. Ezehu Yivesha. What is considered to be dried out? Now here we're talking about the ear of a Bechor that's considered to be a mum. How dried out does it have to be for the ear of this Bechor to be considered a mum? So he says, Im tinakev, ve'im motziya tipat dam. If you puncture it, no blood comes out. That's the sheet of the Tanakam al-Chachamim. It has to be so dry that it crumbles, it's brittle, and it crumbles with your, again, tziporin, with your nail. If you leave out the gears of tziporin between your fingers, according to the Ramah, if you run your fingernail across it, does it return to its original state, or does it leave a marking over there? Now, Gemara says, afilu tamer rabbanan, even the rabbanan might change their mind with regards to the lungs. Because gabi ozen bechor, one more time at the ear of the bechor, the kashalit bezika, because over there it's exposed to the elements, to the outside air, lo hadrabario. There it doesn't become healthy again once it becomes brittle. Of rea delo kashalit beavira, on the other hand, when it comes to the lungs, which are encapsulated in the chest of the animal, then since no outside air touches them, hadrabaria, maybe even the chachamim would agree that when they're dry, that they would still return to the original state. So maybe the chachamim would also require the same level or threshold as Rabbi Yosef ben Meshulam until they're so dry, they're brittle and they crumble. But if you poked it and no blood comes out, maybe by the lungs that's not enough because they could return to their original state because they don't have these outside air that causes them a problem. Rava makes a statement about three items over here, all which are sheirot when it comes to the lungs. So Vama Rava, Hai Reya Tekaima Gilde, that has scabs all over it, and has scabs all over the lungs. Ukme, Rashi says here it means black dots, small black dots around it. Chazuta, or the third possibility of something here is that it's many colored, multicolored. It has many gvanim on it. All of these are not mitrefa, they're not trefot, and they are kshera. Since they aren't red, they don't have the color red, green, or the problematic colors over here. Therefore, they're classified as being kshera because any of these items are not problematic when it comes to the lungs. That's what Rava says. Tosfot asks, Rabbeinu Tam points out over here that the Gemara later on seems to say that if you have black splotches on the lung, that it's problematic because black is just red gone bad. And red, we saw already, is problematic. So the Rabbeinu Tam distinguishes between a lung that has a couple of black dots on it, where Rav over here says it's kshera, and the Gemara later on, when it has black dots, it means al-ruba, on the robe of the lungs, and that's problematic. And it also brings down that Masa Beli Fini Rabbeinu Tam, v'hikshir k'shalaita ruba k'shora. Rabbeinu Tam was makshir when the robe was not black, based on this distinction that he's drawing right here, based on the Rashi. Tosfot rejects this and doesn't like that interpretation. And therefore, he says over here in the Farish, the Uchma de Hocha, the black that's mentioned over here in the Gemara, is not really black. Hainu kukuchla, it's really blue. Later on in the Gemara, when it says it's black, which is red gone bad, that's problematic. No matter how much black you have, it's always problematic. The Gemara over here by Rova that's saying it's Kshera is talking about not real black, but blue. And it calls it Uchma, even though it's really blue. All right, now this last piece we'll end off with. It says a little more complicated piece, and then there is a very, very interesting Rashi that I'd like to see with you, which is Amar Meimar Mishmei de Rava. Meimar Rava says, Eima kifin bevoi. You're not allowed to bring blisters or cysts on the lung next to each other. What that means is that if you have a cyst or a blister on the lung and it has a hole in it, the cyst or the blister actually has a hole through it. The question is, when did that hole happen? Now, if the butcher or the one who shechted the animal can touch that area or can touch where that blister or cyst is, then we assume that he's the one who caused the hole. It happened after Shechita, and he's the one who caused the hole. But it's an area where he wouldn't have handled the lung, and there's a hole in it. Now we have a safek. Did it happen before or after the Shechita? So what Rava says is you cannot bring over another cyst or another lung and then puncture it and see if they look the same. He says that you can't be. There's no such thing as comparing one to the other. You can't make a determination by comparing it to another cyst or blister. We have to go to Chumra over here and assume that it happened before Shechita, even though we don't know. Then Vamarava, Hani Tarte Oni, Desrichan Hadadi, Leidahu Bedika. If you have two lobes, Desrichan Hadadi, that attach themselves together, Leidahu Bedika, there is no way to check them. So now you have in the cow's lungs, you have these lobes. You can see that if you have pictures there, you can see that they have numerous lobes. The cow's lung actually has seven lobes. On the right side, it has four lobes, and then on the left side, it has three lobes. The uppermost lobe is known as either the cranial lobe or the apical lobe. The bottommost lobe is known either as the caudal lobe or the diaphragmatic lobe, and those appear both on the left side and the right side. In the middle, there is the cardiac or middle lobe. On the left side, there's only one of those lobes. On the right side, there are two of those lobes. Sometimes one of them is known as the cardiac, the other one as the middle lobe. But that side has two lobes. In the center, there's also an additional lobe, which is known as the accessory lobe or the intermediate lobe. So when we're talking about here the oni, The Oni are talking about the upper lobes, that's the cranial or apical lobes, and the middle lobes, which are the cardiac lobe. What we're not speaking about here are the bottom lobes, which are much larger, the caudal lobe or the diaphragmatic lobe, because it sits right above the diaphragm, and those are known as the OMA, which we'll get to in a little bit. So for right now, we're just going to discuss the Oni. The Oni are these upper, smaller lobes in the cow's lung. So these Oni, the Srikhan, if they became attached, they somehow scabbed and attached together. Well, we saw earlier in the Gemara that if you have a hole, if you have some sort of nekev, if a scab goes over it, we said that that's not good enough and it remains a hole because eventually the scab's going to fall away from it. The only time it's considered a recovery is that's the natural growth or the natural positioning of the animal. So over here, Rava says, if you have two of these only, two of these lobes, that's Srikhan Adadi that attach to each other, then late lahu bedika, you can't check them. Now Rashi claims the reason that they are Srikhan, the reason they attach, is because there's a hole in one of the lungs. Since one of the lungs has a hole in it, liquid escaped from that lung, and since it now attached to the other lung, it's now the liquid sat there and hardened and attached the two lungs together. So the liquid hardened, it's now covering up the old hole where the liquid emanated from, but since the lungs are absorbent, they pull that liquid towards them, and that created this sircha between the two lobes of the lung. So now, the Gemara says, V'lo amran, ela kishlo kesidran. So Rashi says, this is only true when the two lobes are not adjacent. For instance, you have the upper lobe and the lower lobe, and there's a middle lobe. The upper and lower lobe are attached over the middle lobe, doesn't work. Aval kesidran, hainu rivitayu. On the other hand, if they attach when they're adjacent, that's their natural growth, and therefore it would not be a problem. The way Rashi describes this is that if you have the upper lobe and the lower lobe that are attached, and there's this middle lobe sitting between them, there's going to be tension. That's going to be pulling them away from each other. Since there's tension pulling them away from each other, we're going to assume that eventually it's going to break. That sircha is going to break, and the hole is going to be exposed. On the other hand, if you're talking about the lobes when they're adjacent to each other, there's no tension for them to pull away from each other. They are naturally that way, and they will actually tighten and harden in that section because they are growing in that manner, and that will create an even stronger bind or seal over the hole, and therefore we don't worry about it. That's the way Rashi describes it over here. The first thing is to note is Tosfot brings down dissenting opinions as to what the attachment mean over here. If you look at the Tosfot, Aval Kesidran, Hainu Rivitayu, nearly, so Tosfot says over here, Kesidran Dafka Ba'uto Inyan. Tosfot first of all makes one qualification. He says that when we're talking about these lobes here, it's only when they're sitting adjacent to each other. But if the lobes are sitting on top of each other, and that's where the sircha happened, even that they're close there, and that's their natural position, that's not considered sidran. So that's the first thing Tosfot distinguishes. He says, unlike Rashi, it's not just the adjacent lobes. It has to be adjacent lobes on their sides, not when they're sitting one on top of each other. That's his first comment. Va'od katuv baruch b'shem rach b'shem derbeinu chananu k'sidran kabbalah rav mipi rav, that they have this kabbalah. Afilu srichan tre oni be'emtza, even if two oni are attached in the middle, v'ikran mifarkei, but at their base they still separate, that is a trefa. So over here the oni, the separate lobes, each lobe has a gapping between them. So the gapping between them, where does this sircha happen? So if the sircha, this attachment or this connection happens in the middle of the lobe and still at the bases of the lobe, they're still not attached, according to this mesorah that the Rabbeinu Chananu has, that's a trefa because there'll still be tension, there'll still be something like pulling it away. You need to have that sircha or that attachment happen at the base of the lobes to keep them together and to prevent them from separating. And Behar Beit Mia Rabbeinu Yehuda al Kabbalat Rach, the Rabbeinu Yehuda was Matmiya on this Rach, because of Shlo Matzah B'ho Hilchot Trefot Shrobotenu, we don't find any such thing. Shurash Shum Chiluk Ben Mifarke Mikran V'lo Mifarke. We don't find anywhere such a distinction. He says, I don't know where the Rach got this from. I don't know where this Mesorah is from. So therefore, he rejects it. But Tosfot is still more Chamor than Rashi in requiring that the attachment, the Sircha here, be on the adjacent, on the sides of the lobes, not when the lobes sit one on top of the other. Now, if you go down to Rashi, you'll see that the last Rashi here is a very large Rashi, Hainu Revitayu. And then he explains a little bit, and then he brings down below this something else, a very, very interesting halacha that came up. Ve'ona hasrucha be'oma. What happens if you have an ona that is attached to an oma? Now, oma, I explained before, are the caudal lobes, the large lobes below on the cow's lungs. That we didn't discuss here. All we discussed here is the oni, but not the oma. So now what happens if one of the oni, the upper small lobes, is attached to this lower large lobe? V'etzla, and it's adjacent to it. So Masa Baliyadi, Rashi says, I had a halacha lemaisa like this. It came to me. V'shalti et pi Rabbeinu Yaakov bar Rabbi Yaakov, and I asked my Rebbe, Rabbi Yaakov bar Yaakov, v'hitira li lechol, and he said, I can eat it. V'eshosrim, and he says, there are some that are oser, but I'm matir. V'hu amar li tamo v'tamam, and he says, he explained his own reasoning and their reasoning. The reasoning of those that disagreed with his Rebbe, Rabbeinu Yaakov bar Rabbi Yaakov, is because it's only true by the Oni. The Gemara says Oni, and that's what it means. It means the upper lobes. The reason for that is because the upper lobes are pressured into the cavity of the chest. The cavity of the chest narrows as it moves towards the front, and the upper lobes are pressured much more tightly up at the top than the lower lobes, the caudal lobes, which are more expansion and more room there. And their claim is that the heat of the narrowing of the cavity causes the sircha, those attachments over there, to seal much better. And therefore, the Gemara over here says that only the Oni that attach to each other are classified as a good seal. But if it was the Oma, if it was these caudal lobes and another one of the upper lobes or smaller lobes, that would not work because there's too much air there. And their proof is from a Gemara later on, which says that if the upper lobes are attached to the ribs, we don't assume there's a problem because of the pressure that's there. We assume that those lobes will remain in place against the ribs, and therefore even if there's a hole and they're covered up by the rib, it's fine. Whereas the caudal lobes, the larger lobes, if they are stuck against the ribs, then we assume it is a problem because they're not as pressured. It's not as tight in the cavity over there. That's the people who disagree with his Rebbe. Then his Rebbe says, let me explain to you why I disagree. He says, number one, this idea of heat is never mentioned in the Gemara. Where'd you guys come up with that? The only thing that matters is, yes, the pressure matters, but that pressure can be created by the ribs, but it also can be created between the different lobes that are there. And if they're growing in their natural way, that will create the pressure you need. The second thing he says, which is a very important distinction, he says that the Gemara does not know the word Oma. The word Oma has been made up by the Rishonim. As far as the Gemara is concerned, there's only one type of lobe, and that's called an Oni. That's the only type of lobes. The Rishonim later distinguished between the Oni being the smaller upper lobes and the Oma being the caudal large lobes at the bottom. That is a distinction only drawn by the Rishonim. It does not exist in the Gemara. And so because of that, his Rebbe says that I think this distinction is only a distinction brought by the Rishonim. And therefore, it's Loshna Oni, Veloshna Oma. That makes no difference over here. As long as it's Kivri Vitayu, it's the way they're growing, that's enough to be a sircha, to be a connection. And that's why he was matirit for Rashi. Then Rashi says at the end, V'siyag matzati lidvarav, in the last line, B'tshuvat ha-gonim, V'nikarim divrei emet. I found proof to his position in the gonim, and I think he's right. The Rabbeinu Tam argues against the Rebbe of Rashi, and he notes that in tomorrow's daf from Mem Zayin Aleph, Rab says there are actually chameshit oni. There are five oni, and if you believe that they're really all called oni, and there's no such thing as an oma, then there really should be seven oni, not five. Elama, there are five oni, which are the upper lobes, and those lower two lobes, the caudal lobes, or the diaphragmatic lobes, are actually what the Rabbeinu Tam calls the reya. They're the lungs itself. They don't have a separate name in the Gemara called the Oma, but rather those are the reyot. They're those that disagree with the Rabbeinu Tam and say the Gemara is talking about a rov is only speaking about the five onot up top, which in instances disappear or aren't there, can have treifot, or it's a bigger chiddush that when they get attached, they're a treifa, but not because they're only five, but there are actually seven lobes that are there, and the Gemara does not differentiate between the Oni and the Oma. Then Rashi writes, Inunita devarda. He says this, the accessory lobe, which is the lobe that sits on top of the lungs. There's an extra lobe. It's called the accessory lobe that sits on top of the lungs itself. Over there, Koheka de Savcha, anywhere that it attaches to is Trefa. Tukula Gaba Didash lo Kasidran Ninu. Anything connected to that is not Kasidran, because it doesn't sit adjacent to any of the other lobes. It sits on top of the other lobes. And therefore, any attachment it has to another lobe will not be good and will be a problematic Trefa, because then we assume it's covering up a hole. Now Rashi explained that the reason that the sircha over here works or doesn't work is because the sircha is a product of there a hole. There was a hole in the lungs, some liquid dispersed, and then it dried up because it was absorbed by another part of the lung, and that's how you got the sircha here. Tosfos questions that premise of Rashi, and later on writes, Venira, Befarish de regila sircha levo b'choma kombreya, that the sircha can come anywhere on the lung, below nekev, without a hole. Mitokshi shoevet komine mashke. Since the lungs are very absorbent, therefore any liquid that comes near them can cause this attachment of the lobes. V'had a tarfus, and then why would you make it into a treifa? Shalok is a drum, hainu mishum shesofa lehit parek. The problem is that this seal will get together. If they are in their natural position, there won't be tension for it to pull apart. So the attachment will remain there, and it won't cause tearing of the lung. On the other hand, if they're out of order, if they're not connected out of order, then this unnatural connection eventually will have tension on it. It will tear and cause a nekev. So as opposed to Rashi, who thinks it's a result of a nekev and the internal liquid coming out, here Tosfot says that it's not. It's an external liquid that came, but then eventually it will lead to a nekev being caused because of the tension of this sealing or this hardening of the external liquid between the lobes if the lobes are not in their natural position or adjacent position, because there'll be tension for them to pull apart. All right, I think we'll stop. We're going to stop with that, and then we'll continue with more statements of Rava tomorrow with regards to the lungs.